Okay, good afternoon. Happy Friday. Let's see. So the thought for today is to continue with bijections, and I wanted to do some examples of how to construct bijections, and then how we're going to use bijections, which is to count things. And maybe I'll do an example of counting some things that are finite. But the greatest power of this technique, and which gave some actually surprising results when people first started playing with it, is to try to count infinite sets. And there is it makes more sense than one might guess at first. Upshot of that. But okay, so at the end of last time, I had listed three bijection three possible bijections. One of them was a bijection. Let's see, one of them was not a bijection. The second one was a bijection, and the third one also was a bijection. And I believe we had kind of gone through how to show that something was not a bijection, right? By showing that we had two elements that went to the same value here. Oops. Here. So that was not a bijection. It was not one to one. Then we showed that the second one was a bijection by just explicitly computing. And I didn't write that one out in detail, but that one we just explicitly computed. But I think I would like to come back and write out this one, which you didn't even get to start looking at yet. Okay, so let me focus on this third one. It's also, I think, the most surprising of the three bijections. Okay, so let me, and actually, it hints at where we're headed, which is, for counting, what matters not so much is, it's not so much which bijection you have as that there is a bijection at all. And so that's often the interesting fact, is that there is some bijection. And here, just looking at this set looks considerably bigger than this one. And so the fact that there's a bijection is a little bit surprising. Okay, let me just run through the sketch for claim three. Okay, so let's see. So first of all, let's just try to understand what this is saying. So this is giving us a bijection. And so the set here, this n cross n, I can kind of draw a little bit of a picture for. I can make it a grid. And so I have n here and n here. And then I get this grid of values that are pairs. Okay. And then I can compute what the value of my function is on that pair. So I hope this makes sense. So I'm going to plug the value of f of 1, 1 in here and f of 1, 2 here, et cetera. Okay, so that I'm just going to fill out my grid here and just get a little bit of a picture of what's going on. And if I plug into this function that I wrote last time, so you may have forgotten what it says, if I take a pair, say 1, 1, this goes to 2 to the 1 minus 1 times 2 times 1 minus 1, which is 1 times 1, so it just goes to 1. So filling out my little chart here, I get that my function here is, if I take 1 comma 1, I get 1, right? If, however, I take and increase the first term, the a, each time I increase it, it gets multiplied by 2, right? So if I increase it to 2, it becomes a 2, and if I increase it to 3, it becomes 4, and then it becomes 8, and then 16, and 32. So I hope that is my diagram clear? Is that what I'm doing here? I'm just recording the effect of my function f here on the pair, and the pairs that I'm looking at right now are the pairs of the form 1 comma 1, 1 comma 2, 1 comma 3, etc. Okay, so the ones that start with 1. And on sorry, they're the ones that end with 1. So they're 1 comma 1, 2 comma 1, 3 comma 1, 4 comma 1, like that, right? Because I'm changing the a. Okay, on the other hand, if I leave the a at 1 and then change the b, then I just get the sequence of odd numbers. So I should get 3 and then 5 and then 7 and then 9. Okay, so as I go up here. Okay, and just to make so the notation is clear, what is it clear what number goes here? So that should be f of 2 comma 2. Yeah, okay, I see it in the chat there. It's a 6, right? So when I plug in 2 comma 2, that means that I plug in a 2 here, so I get 2 to the 1, and I plug in a 2 here, so I multiply by 3. So I get 2 times 3, and so I'm going to get 6. Right, the other way to see it is that when I increased the a by 1, it just doubled, and so that should be twice what I got here. So it should just go up by a factor of 2 every time I increase the a, so it should go up to 12 and 24, etc. And okay, and so similar over here, I'm going to double every time I move to the right. All right, and this being a bijection would mean that each number should appear here exactly once. Okay, and so there should be 1, 1 somewhere, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 1, 6, 1, 7, 1, 8, 1, 9, 1, 10. There should be 1, 11. I haven't found it yet. It's going to be up here, right? So each number should occur exactly once in this grid. Okay, so does that make sense? So that's understanding what we're claiming. The claim is that this grid should contain each number precisely once. Okay, that's what we're trying to prove. You're correct about what we're trying to prove. Okay, and so then let's go with the logic here. Right, so the logic of proving that something is a bijection. So let's see. First, I guess we have to argue that it's a function, but this is a function. So it is a function. So we need that it's a bijection. So we need and there are a couple of ways, right? Let me write it a couple of different ways. A bijection. So one way to write that is for all things in the target. So B element of my target set, which is N, there exists a unique C comma D. So that's an element of my domain set A, which is N cross N. With f of c comma d equal to b, maybe not the best name, but anyway, there we go, right? Which is about the same as what we wrote up above, right? That this every number appears exactly once. Or another way to write this is that we can pull apart this exists unique, which is compact but sometimes hard to prove in this way, into the exist part and the unique part into two separate things. And that's often the easier way to prove it. So the exists for all, actually, let me rename these things. I'm finding the names annoying. So let me change their names. I'm going to call them, this one I'm going to call N, and these I'm going to call A and B so that they agree with what I have written over there. Okay, just because they're easier names to think about. Okay, you can always use whatever name you like, but no need to add confusion. All right. Okay, so for all n, there is. AB with f of AB equal to n. So this is exists that's onto. And then the uniqueness is the one-to-one. Right, and so then you have to have uniqueness. So the same sort of thing. If f of a comma b equals f of a tilde comma b tilde, then a is equal to a tilde and b is equal to b tilde. Okay, so that's the logic. Question about that. The first one already proved onto. So by the first one, you mean this one here?
I mean, like the first statement.
This one here.
All of, yeah.
Yeah, this one does both at once for you. It does the onto with the exists part, and it does the one-to-one with the unique part. So this does both. You could prove this one, or you could prove the second one. It's just this first one is tidier and shorter to write, but it's not always easy to figure out how you're going to prove exists unique. That's a hard one to prove usually. And so this is kind of pulling it apart into two things, and there's no exists unique here, so that one might be easier to prove. That's all. Two ways to write the same. Okay, other questions about the logic? Okay, so then let's attempt the proof. All right, so let's start with the existence, so the onto. So if I'm given a number n, then I want to find an a and a b so that this is n. Okay, so onto, if I have n some natural number, then, well, what am I trying to do? This has pulled all the even part out, right? So this number is odd, and this number is a power of 2. So I can always just pull out all the factors of 2 and write it as 2 to some power. Let me call it alpha, because it should remind me of a, but not quite the a, times a beta with alpha greater than or equal to 0 and beta greater than or equal to 1 and odd. Okay. So I just pull out all my factors of 2. Right? So e.g. 12 would be equal to 2 squared times 3. Right? So I can always just split it up into the numbers of power, the powers of 2, and then the rest. Okay, and so then, alpha minus 1, plus 1 is greater than or equal to 1, so is it a natural number? And beta is bigger than or equal to 1 and odd, so beta plus 1 over 2 is also a natural number. Okay. Because I added 1 and made it even, and then I can divide by 2, and it's at least 2. So that. Yeah, you have to be a little careful because multiplication is good, but when I subtract, I might fall off into the negatives. Okay, so you have to be a little bit careful to keep the where you hit 0. That's the key. Okay. All right. So I signed up with this natural number, and then I get that my n is equal to f of alpha plus 1 comma beta plus 1 over 2. So I'm going to take this to be my a and this to be my b, and I just compute this is equal to 2 to the alpha plus 1 minus 1, which is alpha, which is what I wanted, and then 2 times beta plus 1 over 2 minus 1. And if I just run this through that, that's equal to 2 to the alpha times beta, and which is what I wanted. Okay. An idea for existence, right? So I just kind of write my number with the odd part and then the powers of 2, and then make sure that my a's and b's work. All right, and let's see. So then 1 to 1. All right, so to the alpha or two to the two. There should be no two to the twos anywhere, so that should be an alpha, but it does look a lot like a two, so let me make it an alpha. And I'm lying, of course, there is a two to the two up here, but that one's a two to the two. But no, this other one should be, two to the alpha. Okay, so one to one. So if I have two of them that are the same, then I want to show that the A and the B are the same. So if I have F of AB equal to F of A tilde B tilde, right? So that's supposed to be the hypothesis here for the uniqueness one, they're equal. So that means, if I just write it out, that's two to the A minus one times two B minus one. And this one is 2 to the A tilde minus 1 times 2 B tilde minus 1. Okay, and I'm going to assume that they are the same. And I need to show that A and A tilde are the same and B and B tilde are the same. Okay, so let me try the A first. If not, let's say that these two powers of 2 were different. Well, what's going to happen? One of them is going to be more even than the other, right? So all I have to do is divide out some of the powers of 2 from both of them, and I'll get an even equals an odd, and that'll be a contradiction. So let me try that. So try contradiction for A. Okay, let's assume that those are different. Okay, if they're different, one of them's bigger. Right, and so I, without loss, I can just choose one of them, and then the other direction will be equivalent. So, so without loss of generality, so we may assume that A is bigger than A tilde. Okay, one of them is, so we may as well call the A. All right, so then, dividing. By 2 to the A tilde minus 1, we get 2 to the A minus A tilde times 2B minus 1 is equal to 2B tilde minus 1. And so we have an even equals an odd, which is a contradiction. Okay, so we got our contradiction. All right, and then finally, if A equals A tilde, and then I have 2 to the A minus 1 times 2B minus 1 equals 2 to the A minus 1 times 2B tilde minus 1. And now I can divide both sides by A minus, by the powers of 2. So I get, I'll give it a little parenthesis. So I get 2B minus 1 is equal to 2B tilde minus 1. And then I add 1 to both sides, divide by 2, and I get B is equal to B tilde. And I'm done. OK, so that is the complete proof. So sketch, any question about how that idea worked there before trying to write it out? Okay, let's see. So it's a little bit long, but.
Professor?
Mm-hmm.
For that first part, not first part, the stuff before the even equals odd contradiction.
This part up here?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't you just conclude from that A is equal to A tilde or?
Yes.
So
you're wondering why I put if here?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. So probably what's going to come there, you're right, it's probably going to be hence. A is equal to A tilde. You're right. We can now assume that, and so we will assume it. So we will take hence is equal to a tilde. And then, yeah, you're right. And then the logic continues, and we get also b is equal to b tilde, which is what we wanted. Yes. So yeah. So once we get to here, then we can assume that a is equal to a tilde from that contradiction. Other questions about the logic structure? Okay, so let's just write out the proof of the claim. Yeah. Kind of long, so I'll try to abbreviate it some. So proof of claim 3. Okay, let's see if we go back up here. Right, so the first thing to do is onto, F is onto. Since if we have n a natural number, then n is equal to the alpha times beta with alpha beta odd. Alpha greater than or equal to 0 and beta greater than or equal to 1. Okay, take A equals, let's see, what did we get here? We decided it should be alpha plus 1. And B equals, let's see, where is it? Over here. Beta plus 1 over 2. Hence, F of A comma B equals 2 to the A times 2 times beta plus 1 over 2. Oops, did I get a minus 1? Okay, which is one word. Okay, so that's one direction. I'm sorry, that's one of the two parts. And so the other part is that showing that F is 1-to-1. Okay, and so for 1-to-1, we have to do the usual thing for 1-to-1. We assume that those two things are equal, and then we're going to go through our proof here that shows that if the f's are equal, then the a's and b's are also equal. Since if we have 2 to the a times 2b minus 1 equal to 2 to the a tilde 2b minus 1, and, sorry, 2b tilde minus 1, different a's and different b's, then and if for contradiction A is bigger than A tilde, then 2 to the A minus A tilde times 2b minus 1 is equal to 2b tilde minus 1, which is both odd and even, a contradiction. I guess it's both even or not. So we have that so A is less than equal to A tilde, and similarly, A tilde is less than equal to A, so A is equal to A tilde. And then we come to this last bit here, hence, We have 2 to the a minus 1 times 2 b minus 1 equals 2 to the, now it's just a because we a and a tilde are the same, times 2 b tilde minus 1. So dividing both sides, we get 2 b minus 1 equals 2 b tilde minus 1, and adding 1 to both sides and dividing by 2, we get b equals b tilde 2. So that's a way of showing that we get a bijection. Now, any questions about that?
I had a question about the a tilde is less than a, the less than or equal to a.
Okay.
So there exists, doesn't that mean like there exists an a equal to a tilde? Like that's possible?
Yeah, so let me get, you're right, I wasn't terribly careful with the quantum pressure. So here we have, so F is 1-to-1 sense. Okay, so here's what we argue. If, so we're taking, we're assuming that, so the right quantum pressures are for all, that's what that if is, A, B, A tilde, B tilde, with this property. Okay, so that's what we're assuming here. So for all A, B, A tilde, and B tilde that have these two things being equal, what I need to show is that A is equal to A tilde and B is equal to B tilde. That's the quantifiers, okay? So for all of, and what I showed was that if you have those four, so if you have those four numbers that satisfy this equation, then we for contradiction, we assume this was true and it wasn't, so we get its negation. So this must be true. Okay, so that's the logic. Does that make sense? So again, it was for all a, b, a tilde, and b tilde satisfying this, I have this.
I think my question was like, what happens to the less than
part? Well, why can't it be less than? Yeah. So that's the second one here.
So like, I understand why it's not
less than. I'm going to repeat the same argument.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is similarly, this is the same argument here. That's what that similarly means.
Oh, okay. That's similarly part. Okay.
Go back and make this assumption. I'm going to get this.
For the similarly part, shouldn't it be like a tilde less than a without the equal part?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, so similarly, maybe I should have written it out more. Similarly, if for contradiction you assume the opposite one, which was that A is smaller than A tilde, then you get a contradiction. So what you end up with is that A is bigger than or equal to A tilde, which is what's written here.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, in other words, I'm switching the roles of A and A tilde when I do this similarly.
Oh, okay. Did not see that.
Okay, yeah, that's the idea. So
thank you.
So here we proved this, and this says, well, actually, we could just as well prove the other one by switching the roles of A and A tilde.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. I missed that.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay, other questions about the structure of that proof?
For the existent part, could you quickly explain again how you assigned A equals alpha plus 1 and B is beta plus 1 over 2?
So let's see. So that happened twice, of course, because I did the sketch and then I did the actual proof. So, I get to choose them this way if I want to, all right? And then I want to check that it worked. Now over here, I tried to figure out what would work, okay? And I found that what I want is to get something that's gonna give me the right answer. And since I have n is equal to the 2 to the alpha times something odd, the number of powers of 2 here, I'm calling alpha, that has to be, and my function gives me a minus 1 powers of 2. So the number of powers of two alpha needs to be equal to this a minus one. So then I'm, to make that happen, I'm going to take a equals alpha plus one, which I think is probably what I wrote here, right? So it's just so that so I worked out over here what would work, and then over here what I did was I checked it. I plugged. So there are two questions. I'm not sure which one you're asking. One is, once I make that decision and I decide that I'm going to do that, then I just have to check that it works. Okay. So one is whether checking that it works pans out. Okay. So if I plug in that A and that B, I plug it in into my function here. So my function says I take A, I subtract one from it, and I take that power. Oh, which it's not what I wrote, is it? So maybe that's what's confusing. Let me correct what I wrote here. That should be my alpha. That should be an alpha rather than an A. So maybe that will clarify. So let me fix that. So that is an alpha, not an A. Okay. Did that answer part of your question? So once I make that decision, then I just have to check that it works. And so when I plug A and B into my function F, I get 2 to the A minus 1, that's 2 to the alpha, and I get 2 to and I get 2 times B minus 1, that's 2 times this minus 1. And when I take 2 times that and subtract 1 from it, I get beta back.
So you just basically picked an A and B that would give you a 2 to the alpha beta to show that it's a natural number.
Yeah, so I just picked an A and a B that would give, so this is the number that I decided I had, okay? I had 2 to the alpha beta, and I picked an A and a B that would give me that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Okay, it's kind of a long one, but it is a useful bijection to have around. Okay, and we'll be constructing a couple more interesting, complicated ones. And, there are like 4, and this is one of them. Okay. All right. Okay, so let's just do a little bit more playing around with building bijections. Most of them are not as much work as this. So, and the big advantage to building bijections is that you can combine bijections you've already built and get more. And that's often the way to do it. And so let me just do an example of that. And let me just remind you of a couple of facts. So recall or notes. Actually, one of them you're going to prove in a bit, so it's not here to recall. So there are some equivalent conditions for a function to be bijective. So F mapping A to B is a bijection if and only if. Okay, so here's another way to say that. And this is one that we saw before. I guess this was theorem 4.4. Okay, and it said that another way to say that is to write something where you compose both directions. So there exists a G mapping B to A with, if I do G and then I do F, that's going to take me from B to B, and it's going to be the identity. And when I do F and then I do G, that's going to take me from A to A, and it's also going to be taken. You need both. And that was something that we use. So that's often handy. And another one that's equivalent, and this is I guess this one is the one that we called theorem 4.4.4. I got the labels mixed up. This one is a homework problem. And it'll be 4.4.6, which will be assigned. Okay, and 4.4.4 told us that that's equivalent to there being an inverse. Yeah, let me just call it G, because it is G. G mapping B to A with G equals F inverse. Okay. And another equivalent condition, and this is corollary 4.4.3, says that there is it's the same, except you also get to assume that G is itself a bijection. So it's just a stronger statement. There exists G mapping B to A with G equals F inverse, and G is a bijection. Okay, so why would you want all of those? Because if you have figured out that F is a bijection, then that gives you another bijection, which might be handy to have using the other direction. Let me just do some examples of using this. I think it's a lot clearer when I have an example. So let me do an example over the reals. So so I'm going to write down, let's see, five bijections. And then I'm going to ask you to find two bijections using those, okay? So actually, I just don't want to use four of them, but one of them I'm going to start with just to get warmed up. So let me start with the some bijections here. Okay, so A. So let's take the map A. That will be a map from and the interval from 0 to 1 to the interval 0 to 3. And I claim this is a bijection. And but let me tell you what it is. So A of x is going to be 3 times x. Okay. And so let me just check this. Okay, let's see. So can we see how I might build something so that I can use one of these criterion to check that my map is a bijection just by building its inverse? So what would the inverse be here?
Would it be 1 over 3x?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Since if I take a function, we call it g of x, so as not to bias myself, to be 1 over 3x, then we can check that if I take a g composed with g first and then a applied to x, actually, you know, let me change variables because I find that that's more clear when I do it that way. So let me just change the name of this variable from x to y. It doesn't change anything, right? I can always name things anything I like, but it's more confusing if I use the same variable for both my function and its inverse, and less confusing if I use a different name. So let me do that, okay? All right, so if I apply this, then I'm going to start on a y. And that way it's easy for me to keep track of which function I'm supposed to apply, because g gets applied to y's and a gets applied to x's. So it's easy to remember. All right, so if I apply this, so that's the same as taking a of g of y, and so that's equal to 3 times 1/3. Times y, which is equal to y. A composed g is equal to the identity, all right? And it takes anything in 0 to 3 and gives me something in 0 to 3. And if I go the other direction, g composed a on x is equal to g of a of x, which is equal to 1/3 of times 3 times x, which is equal to x. So we get that g composed a is equal to the identity on 0, 1. So that's often an easy way to check that you have a bijection. If you can figure out what the inverse is, then you're set. Okay, so that's quick. Okay, the rest I won't check. I'll just list some examples. So I want you to try this. So find a bijection and let's see, this one I want, let me call it F, and it's going to be from the close interval 0,1 to the open interval 0,1, and find F of a half and F of 1 over pi. So those are both elements of 0,1. Also one more thing, and F of 1. Okay, so I want to find those three values using. Okay, so you can try to do it de novo, but it's easier to use things that you already have. And so I'm just going to give you a bunch of things that you already have, and you can use them. So so I'm going to use a B mapping 0,1 to 1, infinity, which takes B of x is equal to 1 over x. It's a bijection. And the idea is to you take your inverses and compose, et cetera. And so, C, I can also take, if I stick 1 in there and use the same formula, C equals 1 over x, then is it clear what the image is here? So I've just added one more point, that 1, and when I take 1 over 1, I just get 1, so I just added the point 1. So this is also a bijection. And let's see, I want to give you two more. So this one, you don't use directly, but it's a convenient one to have in mind. I'm going to take the whole numbers. So that's the numbers 0, 1, 2, et cetera. I just added 0 to the natural numbers, and I'm going to take it to the natural numbers. And I want this to be a bijection. Actually, can anyone tell me what a formula would be? How would I take a whole number and get a natural number and make that map into a bijection? So I get every natural number exactly once.
You just add 1 to each whole number?
That's right. I just add 1. N plus 1. That's straightforward. But the clever thing is that I can make use of that to get the following map. E, and I'm going to map it from the closed interval from 0. Oops, I miswrote, didn't I? So that should be a 1. And that's also what I want here. So from the closed interval from 1 to infinity to the open interval from 1 to infinity. So how do I make that 1 disappear? I'm going to do, I always want to start at 1, not 0. So how do I make that 1 disappear? It's the same way that I made that 0 here disappear. I just add it, and it disappears off to infinity. Okay, so that's going to be my trick. So I'm going to take E of x is equal to, if it's an integer, I'm going to add 1 to it. So x plus 1. If x is a natural number, and x otherwise. Okay, so I just take that that 1 and I move over to 2, and the 2 I bump up to 3, and the 3 I bump up to 4. So the integers just get bumped up and nothing else does. So that's going to be my trick. And this is a bijection. Okay, so running low on time here, this is actually an N here. So there's only one W right here. I started at 1. So these are the so now they start at 1. Okay, let me get this right here. So, maybe I'll draw a picture and it'll be clear. This one, there are two maps that add one. There's this one and there's this one. Here I got the one and I got rid of the zero, mapped it to one, the one to two. And so this is a map from W to N, okay? This one, I started at one, right? So I have this line here that goes to infinity and starts at one. And I'm mapping to the line that doesn't have one, okay? And so the one goes to two, and the two goes to three, and the three goes to four, and all the other numbers just go straight down. They don't change, okay? Send those away. Okay, let's see, I'm almost out of time. So, all right, so does anyone see how I might combine the maps that I have here to get this map F?
Could you take the inverse of B? No. Yeah, inverse of B. That would be the, you want that to be output. So B composites, B inverse composite C, is it?
Let's see, so, okay, I find it easier when I draw the picture. So B inverse, like you suggest, I just drew the wrong one, didn't I? So B inverse, let me make it right. So B inverse is supposed to go from one infinity.
One. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I drew it backward, thank you. To zero, right, very good. That's where B inverse goes. And so now if I'm going to composite it, as you suggest, then I need something that lands here, right?
Sorry.
E?
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
that's right.
Yeah, E.
Anyone see that? So I have this E over here. If I go over here to my E, so that's, that starts here at the one infinity. Okay?
And then C.
Right, and then C. And that's going to get the whole way. So then I have this C here. C goes from 0, 1 box. Okay, so I get a map from the half closed interval to the open interval, and this is what I'm going to take F to be, will be the composite of these three functions. Okay, does that make sense, everyone? So this is how I do it, and often this is really how you do it. You find a few basic ones, and then you just start playing with them, because this composition and whatnot can get you a long way. Once you've got a few basic ones. And often the hard work is getting those basic ones, but then you get a lot of mileage out of it. But let's just make sure we understand these by computing these three values here. So let's try them. So let's see. So what is F of, let's start with a half. So let me just write that. So it's supposed to be C of E of the inverse of a half, right? That's what it means to do that composition, right? And so let's see, what is a, you know, I wrote it backward. I do apologize. Let me fix it. I wanted to write it backward. We write, and I think the answer is right, but let me write it out correctly here. So B inverse is the one we do last, so it goes in this order. Right, sorry, I wrote the C and the B inverse on the wrong side. So, which threw me off here. So this is a B inverse of E of C of a half. Okay, let's see then if I get the same answer that someone got over here. 1/3 is more promising, yes. So so if we apply C to a half, then we're gonna get 1/2, so that's gonna give us 2, right? And then when we apply E to a half, that's a 2, sorry. That's an integer, right? So we're gonna add 1 to it, so we're gonna get 3. Okay, so just as you suggested, then when I apply the B inverse to 3, well, what is B? B just is 1/x. What's B inverse? It's also 1/x, right? So it's its own inverse. So then we get a third. So this is exactly as you had at first, that it is a third, right? Okay, we're good. And let's just do the last two. So what about f of 1/π? Right, it's, that one doesn't change because there's no shift that happens under the E, right? The E is just gonna give us X back that time. And then finally, what happens to that endpoint here, that one that's off at the end here, it lands somewhere because this is a bijection, right? Yeah, and that one's gonna land at a half, right? So if we look at what we've got here, we've got a bijection between these two things. And the one has to land somewhere, it gets stuffed in the middle, but then wherever it gets stuffed gets bumped, and they all get bumped, but they get bumped closer and closer. So it's, anyway, it creates a bijection. There's a really clever trick you can do with this that allows you to build two spheres of the same size out of one sphere by breaking that up and doing these sorts of tricks and moving around. Goes by the name of a paradox. In any case, out of time, and next time we will use these bijections to count.